All right. Side quests.
Side quests.
So this is where we're going to get into like fuzzy definition territory, because especially when you look at the prevalence of open worlds, side quests, as you implied, are becoming more and more the meat of a game. In fact, it feels misleading to call it side quest in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of games where the side quests are clearly the intended experience. You mentioned Breath of the Wild there. If you go straight to the final boss and win, you end up with quite a disappointing experience.
to me,
fucking challenging one.
Like side quest versus critical path, right? Which is like a side quest is defined as anything that is unnecessary to complete the game.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? When we say completing the game, what we mean specifically in this context is reaching story end.
Sure. I'm with
which you. Is, the only real indicator that is story end is that they roll the credits afterwards.
Right.
It seems pretty arbitrary in a game like Breath of the Wild or other like side questy, sandboxy style games. In a lot of games, it's the big climactic end. It's the big central drive of everything.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of games where it's just another quest path among several, and it just arbitrarily ends with credits.
That's fair. I think like Breath of the Wild is definitely an outlier where it truly, truly is all side quest. Everything is optional, which makes it special as far as I'm concerned. I think if we look at something that's a little more traditionally like open world, like a Skyrim, where there is a ton of side quests, but there is also a big meaty main quest section. Right?
How meaty though? I mean, there's some side tracks in Skyrim that are one could argue are almost as meaty.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, if you like give yourself the task of becoming the guild master for all the guilds,
mm-hmm.
a Thieves Guild, Warriors Guild, Mages Guild, that together probably makes a pretty critical path game in itself.
Absolutely.
The adventures of Mr. Jack of all trades, master of none, and how he somehow wins over everyone he meets.
Like just like getting yourself into the Thieves Guild in general is a meaty few hours. And then that has all of its own little side quests and meanings and upgrades. Yeah, it's huge, but not necessary to complete the story of Skyrim, right?
Yeah. But there's like non-sandbox games that have side quests to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been replaying Persona 5 lately.
Right.
Which has a very clear critical path, because like a day-to-day life sim thing, it unlocks dungeons at specific parts of the plot, but there's still a lot of stuff you do on the side. And rather than just like explore, you just have to know to go to a specific spot at a specific time, and where someone will, and talk to some random person.
Okay.
And they will say, boy, I sure wish I had a complete collection of bear scrotums.
Sure.
And that feels a lot. I mean, in that case, the side stuff is optional. It's optional stuff, but if you do it, it can also give you extra strength for the critical path. It makes you can get extra abilities, you can get extra items.
Yeah.
It makes the critical path slightly easier.
Well, and like to me, that's like the base level. The base level of a side quest, yes, will give you experience points. We'll give you a little more story that has to do with the world. My personal favorite side quests always have a way of integrating themselves into the main story quest. Thinking of Breath of the Wild, all of your champion beast runs are essentially side quests. You don't have to do any of them, but they help you in the final battle, right?
Yes. As you know, I'm a great believer in primary loop-focused game design. Mm-hmm. I feel like all the side stuff has to feed back into the primary loop, even if it just gives you money. Even
sure.
if it just gives you money that you can use to buy a better weapon at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's weird examples like the Yakuza games where the side stuff is completely side, like almost feels like a completely separate game
okay.
to the critical path.
Like it doesn't give you anything. It's just fun stuff to do, or what?
Well,
what
it gives it gives you like money generally, or like items and things. But it does feel like it's completely optional, because in a lot of cases in the Yakuza games, the critical path isn't that hard.
Oh, okay, okay.
You can just like get through it without using items and just kick the shit out of everything.
Sure.
It's usually the premise. But the side quest will be like, well, take the most recent example, Yakuza Like a Dragon, which is a turn-based RPG with turn-based combat, with dungeons and exploration and all that. And then, just off to the side, there's a business management simulator in there as well. That is completely separate from the main game, where you where you spend like billions of yen to buy up businesses and hire staff and position the right staff in the right businesses in order to maximize profits.
Okay.
And they specifically say the money that you're spending on businesses in the business sim, that's money that you can't touch in the main game. You can't have that money. That money's just for buying business stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's the business's money. It's not your personal money. I think okay, every few levels in the business sim, you get like a CEO cash bonus, which is like money you can use elsewhere. But otherwise, it's just sort of playing Monopoly on the side.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
And in that case, I always felt this is sort of going against my usual advice that side plot should tie back into the primary loop at some point, because it's the side stuff that kind of makes the Yakuza series. It's kind of what gives the series its charm.
Yeah.
Because it's nothing if not audacious. I mean, this is the games where you fight enemies by picking up park benches and swing them around and grab people and smash their noses into passing car bumpers.
Sure.
It's a game series characterized by audacity. And the fact that there's an entire section of the game that's probably had a completely different team working on it,
yeah,
that's absolutely nothing to do with the critical path and completely irrelevant. And there's like something like this in every Yakuza game. In Like a Dragon, it's the management sim.
Mm-hmm.
In Yakuza Kiwami, I think, there's like model car racing.
Oh, okay.
In one of the games, there's like a... It's like sort of like a Pokemon Snap-style rail shooter side thing you can do.
This is why I've never played these games. I just can't.
The fact that this entire ridiculously elaborate thing is in the game purely optionally and very easy to miss sort of adds to the game's image as incredibly audacious games, I suppose. They're even audaciously designed.
Sure, okay. I can be with you there. I think. While I've never played those, I guess I understand your argument. I think we can look to games like Witcher 3, which has a billion and one side quests. But as we've discussed before, those side quests are also integrated very well into the general story, as that's a Witcher's job, is to roam from town to town and obtain side quests, right?
Exactly. It's all like building the tone. It's setting the tone.
Absolutely. Building.
Of course, I was sort of arguing against my real feelings in this week's episode.
Oh,
because
okay.
To my mind, a side quest is what defines an open world game.
Sure.
Although, there are examples of open world games that don't have side quests.
Really?
Mafia 2. Mafia 2 is an open world game that doesn't have side quests.
Then why is it an open world game?
That would be a very good question. You drive to the part of the open world where the next mission in the critical path is, you do the mission, and the game goes, well done, now go home and go to bed. And you do, and that's all you do.
That's insanity.
I know, and which proves my point. If you don't have side quests in open world, everyone thinks you're insane.
Huh. Yeah, because that's the whole point of an open world. Like, you know, like I said during the regular episode, like that choice is part of what makes side quests so much fun. Is just saying, hey, there's a little there's a little cave over there. Do I want to go in that cave right now, even though I'm on this other mission? Yeah, I do want to go in that cave.
The side quest is the symbol of the open world game.
Yes.
It is its totem. It is its spirit animal.
It's the symbol of interactivity, is like what I was boiling that argument down to, which is just like the idea of like a video game being an interactive medium. The side quest is that ultimate thing. Do you want to do this? You can. You don't have to. It's up to you. And I think that's so beautiful.
So we were going to talk about our favorite specific examples of side quests.
Absolutely. Actually, you know what? Before we get there, just on the note of interactivity, I was looking up the history of the side quest. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I brought Gygax and Arneson into it is that Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson are the creators of the original Dungeons and Dragons. And according to...
I knew Gygax was. I didn't know who that other motherfucker was.
So according to my research, the history of side quests can be found within Dungeons and Dragons, specifically the 1979 version of the Dungeon Master's Guide, where they talk about improvising your world. Mm. So I thought it was very, very interesting. Here's what it says in the 1979 version of the Dungeon Master's Guide. The campaign might grow slowly or it might mushroom. Be prepared for either event with more adventure areas and the reason for everything which exists and happens. This is not to say that total and absolute perfect information will be needed, but a general schema is required. For this, you can give vague hints and ambiguous answers. It is no exaggeration to state that the fantasy world builds itself. And so that's the idea of the side quest.
Well, they can say that because D&D can be made up as you go along.
Exactly.
A new dimension, a new like codification for side quests was added for video games because you have to specifically add them. You can't just have a scenario where a player goes, oh, I'm going to investigate this wall now. You go, oh, well, I've just realized there's something really interesting on that wall. No, you can't prepare for that. It's going to have to be part of the enclosed loop.
But I think what the articles that I was reading were looking at how tabletop RPGs informed video game RPGs later on. And so I just thought that was an interesting bit of history that I wanted to share. Now let's move on to some of our favorite side quests.
All right then.
Mm-hmm. I have one to start with because we just talked about The Witcher 3, one of my favorite Witcher 3 side quests. I had to look up the name for all of these, but I definitely remember this one is when you head into a town and you start asking around if anyone needs any monster slayed, and the town is pissed at you because it just had a run-in with another Witcher who did a really bad job, and you find a counterfeit Witcher. Do you remember this?
Oh, I think I do, actually. Bloody cowboy plumbers.
I believe the quest is called Witcher Wannabe, and like tracking down this other Witcher to me really cemented like that my like self idea of Geralt.
Mm.
Oh, excuse me, of Geralt. And you know, just like, oh yes, I am really good at my job. Being a Witcher is really hard. Look at this asshole, can't even do anything. It gave me a really good sense of the character.
That would probably be really satisfying to pull off. Because there's something about that specific scenario. And I can think of some other examples. In the third Thief game, which wasn't that good. It was better than the fourth Thief game.
Sure.
You can stumble across a side spot where as you're sneaking around a house, the hub town looking for shit to steal, you overhear someone going... like, hello, my name's Garrett. I'm the master thief. Hire me and I will do some stealing for you. And you hear this whole conversation between these two guys. Garrett, of course, characterized as a very sarcastic character, so you're just waiting for him to say something after that conversation's over. And then he says something like, well, I think I'd better look into this, Garrett the master thief. And then you like break into this dude who's pretending to be you's house. and steal all his shit and knock him on the bonce and tie him up. Or, well, not that last thing. Or maybe you just mess around with his ragdoll if you're into that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
And it feels satisfying to contrast, you know, the faker with you, the ultra-efficient protagonist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, like, neither are necessary for the story to continue, but it gives you that sense of world, that sense of purpose.
Yeah, it's a fun character-building moment. Mm-hmm. And now we've talked about it, I think I'm going to have this as a side story in Starstruck Vagabond at some point.
Ooh, I like that. Where some other space captain isn't as good as you or pretending to be you.
Yeah, I've been trying to come up with, like, stories for all the NPC crew members. Mm-hmm. And you go through the story to, like, get introduced to them and they get added to your crew. And this might be a fun one to do.
Ooh, I like
someone who's just not as good at space captaining as you.
Ooh. Or
is pretending to be you.
Yes. Player empowerment. I love it.
There you go.
Hmm. All right, what do you have on your list of
My first example that I thought was worth talking about is a side quest that isn't a side quest. And it happens in the game Gravity Rush, which was originally a PS Vita exclusive, but was later got a release on the other consoles after, like, ages, which was a crime because it was actually a pretty good game.
I remember playing it on my Vita, yes.
But there's a bit in Gravity Rush where you are presented a mission which, for all intents and purposes, looks like one of the many bullshit little side quests that game has, where you just run into, like, someone who's, like, standing next to a pit.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes, oh, I accidentally dropped the letter from my boyfriend down that hole. Now I can't go down there because I don't have gravity powers. Could you go and get the letter from my boyfriend?
Mm-hmm.
And you go, of course. This is like part and parcel of the life of a Gravity Rush protagonist. Picking up somebody's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But then it turns out this isn't a side quest at all. This is the critical path. Because when you get down that hole, you find it opens up to a larger hole, and then an even larger hole, and you keep descending and descending down these increasingly massive abysses. And then you reach, like, the bottom of the world, and you get captured by this mysterious community. And then in the game's narrative, it's like something like 2 years within the game narrative before you get back to the top of the world, and you get back to the top of the world, and everything's changed, and an evil government's taken over. And it is possibly one of the most surprising moments in that game.
That's beautiful. That's jaw-dropping. That's beautiful.
I think you even, like, run into the person whose letter you were going to get, and they've completely forgotten you and the person who's written the letter.
That's insanity. That's crazy. It's a
quirky game, and that's one of the moments that make it stand out for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Subversion, you see.
Well,
you thought was X, but was Y all along.
And it's the idea, like, the thing that makes side quests so magical, something that I talked about a little bit in the episode, which is, like, giving you that sense of world, like, just adding part of the narrative that isn't being force-fed down your throat.
But also this catches you off guard. Because you think it's a side quest, so you're expecting it to just go back to, like, status quo after 5 minutes. You bring back the letter and she goes, oh, I've just realized this is not the letter I was after. Actually, I must have dropped it in a different pit on the other side of town. And then eventually we all learn a lesson about friendship.
Absolutely.
And then go back to whatever you were doing. But because our guard was down, we were going, oh, guess we'll sort this out before we get on with whatever the next important thing we had to do was.
But wait! So that's great.
That was where they use your expectations of established tropes to catch you off guard.
Yeah.
That's like meta side questing. That's like beyond the concept of side quests now. Now we're deconstructing the concept of side quests.
That's beautiful. I think that's beautiful. That reminds me a lot of, like, your first time, like, doing a proper playthrough of Skyrim, and you just end up in a random cave, like, oh, there's probably some bandits, maybe a wizard down here. I'll quickly clear it out and move on. And then all of a sudden you're in, like, the dwarven ruins and robots are attacking you, and you go, where the hell am I? What is happening? Yes.
Yeah. We were actually hoping to surprise you with this. You just, it's like stumbling in and all the balloons are half put up and and the happy birthday banner hasn't been nailed up on one side, and they go, shit, happy birthday, here's some robots to fight.
But the, it's still that joy of discovery, even though it might not have been the intended way they wanted you to discover it, you still get that joy of discovery. And in fact, you get more. You get a sneaky joy of discovery because you stumbled into it. That's what I think, at least. Let's see here. Next on my list of side quests I really enjoyed is the sniper in the dinosaur in Fallout New Vegas, which I believe is called One for My Baby.
And what happens in that one?
You run into a small settlement in the New Vegas wastelands, and there is a protector of this settlement, a little sniper in a giant dinosaur mouth, you know, like one of those plexiglass dinosaurs. And he says, hey, I can't find my wife. I need someone to look for my wife. Can you find her for me? And it seems like it's a very simple side quest. But the neat thing about this quest is you can tell this guy that you found the person that kidnapped his wife, and it doesn't necessarily have to be true. You can shove anyone in front of that dinosaur mouth and he'll just kill them.
That was, of course, where Fallout New Vegas stood out from the other 3D Fallouts, because it was made by Obsidian, who brought back all their commitment to actual quest branching.
Yes.
That they had in the original Fallouts. You could just lie.
Yeah. You could just lie. And like, to me, it's a pretty early quest in that game, and it's just a great way to acclimate you to the different choices. You can go around, you can find who actually stole his wife and sold his wife to slavers and punish that person. Or you could just pick someone you're pissed at and say, hey, go over there, and he'll snipe them and kill them in one shot. It's great.
There's a lot of that sort of thing in Planescape Torment, which was quite very heavily character-based with lots of different branches you could take. And there'd be multiple times where you'd like get multiple conversation options, and one of them would be like something like, I will help you. And then under that is the option, I will help you, open brackets, lie, close brackets.
And that's fun, and and that's fun, and that's something that really should be, like, especially for RPGs, right?
That's great for, like, building the character you want to build, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the other thing side quests are good for. By selecting which side quests you do and not others, you can more round out your idea of your own character.
Right.
You know what sort of things they think is important and what sort of things they'll just kick in the head because it sounds boring.
Right. It's not like, what do I think I would do? It's what do I think my character would do?
So you could say that side quests are an essential part of RPGs rather than open worlds, because the side quest is the only thing you can choose to do. So, and that's the only role playing in the game. In the critical path, you always have to be basically the same character, or it gets basically the same result.
I'd say for the most part that's true. I think, like, even looking at something like New Vegas, there are obviously little variants here and there in the critical path. But yes, for the most part in RPGs, they have an end point, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you are the best sneaky archer in the world or a big dumb barbarian, you still have to kill the dragon at the end of Skyrim. I like that. That's a really good way to think about it, is in an RPG, the side quests are the RPG.
Well, so far we've been talking about side stories mainly.
Okay.
Like it's like a critical path, but it's not critical. It's just a path.
Yeah.
You go down here, here's story event A, B, and C. And I was, when I talk about side quests, I think about, excuse me, a little windy pop. I think about stuff that's not so much a side story as sort of a side activity running through the whole game.
Oh, okay.
And we've often cited the bad examples, like flags in Assassin's Creed. So I was trying to think of some examples of those that I've actually quite liked. And the first thing I've written down on my list here is Riddler trophies.
What?
Riddler trophies from that the Batman Arkham games.
That you like?
Yeah.
Ew.
And I'll tell you why I like the Riddler trophies.
All right.
The Batman Arkham series. Firstly, because I quite like the Riddler as a character in those games.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I think he's the only supervillain who's in all four games and has an arc running through them all.
Okay.
So in like Batman Arkham Origins, he's just like a hacker who's trying to do some sort of vigilante justice. And then like you defeat him and he goes a bit around the bend. Starts wearing weird green suits, and then he's the Riddler in Arkham Asylum, and then in the next few games he gets more and more disheveled and insane from game to game, until by the end he's basically just not taking care of himself at all. And he's looking gaunt and insane and completely sort of lost sight of what a riddle is, because he's making you do
because he's making race tracks. Yeah.
But I also think that's a big part of shaping the identity of the Arkham world. Because you see them everywhere. There's like little green question marks sitting around the sides of buildings. It becomes part of the sort of central identity of that game. It's one of the few games I can think of where its like biggest side activity has such a strong visual identity.
Maybe
you think it's arbitrary bullshit, but I happen to think it's a nice sort of... it's a nice thing to have running in the background of the games, I suppose. It's a nice sort of connecting element for me.
While I understand your argument, I always thought the Riddler trophies were the worst part of all the Batman Arkham games.
There's it sort of raises some questions about Batman's motivation if he's willing to put so much work into getting them.
Right.
Well, I think secretly they're both kind of like this whole business. Batman's just, you know, he collected football stickers when he was a kid. He just likes being reminded of those times.
He has some obsessive tendencies, one could say.
Yeah, they got that in common.
Exactly.
I never really understood. I mean, I guess this is a point against Riddler's characterization in those games. I never understood if he actually wanted you to solve his riddles or not. Because by the end of every game, he goes, "No, how have you defeated me by solving all my riddles? You must have cheated. I despise you." But then he seems to get openly frustrated if you seem to be having trouble figuring out his puzzles every now and again.
And they've handled this really well in a few comic runs where Riddler has flat out said, the reason why I keep toying with you is because you're the only one who can keep solving my puzzles, and you challenge me as a clever person. You know, Batman, you are the reason I exist. I keep doing this because you keep putting up a challenge. Yeah.
It's like the relationship between a game designer and the players.
Exactly.
It said, "You'll never solve this one, except I kind of want you to." Yeah. So you'll take a video of yourself doing it and put it on YouTube, and that will raise my profile. Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Well, I think that is something very, very specific to game designers, game masters, where it's like you are facilitating the fun. And so you want to make it challenging, and you could very easily make it impossible, but then there's no fun in that, right? Like a game designer could make a game literally impossible.
Yeah.
Of course they could.
And there'd be no... Yeah, as you say, there'd be no fun in that. The real fun is making something that's almost impossible and seeing who figures it out.
Exactly. Just that comfort zone, that gray area where it's like some people can't do this, some people can, and finding that balance and difficulty. That's the real fun. And yeah, and so, like I said, they've handled the Riddler in some comic runs very well like that.
It's like being Jigsaw from the Saw movies. That's like probably the main inspiration
for
the way he's done in the Arkham games.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that they put a little puzzle with each one.
Hmm.
A lot of games just do the Assassin's Creed thing. They just put it in a spot, in an unlikely spot. Oh, bet you wouldn't come here. I appreciate that there is some gameplay design goes into it as well.
And I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I'm trying to think of other kind of examples of like truly side stuff that doesn't necessarily have its own story or its own thing.
Well, I have one, but that's my next. That's like the last thing on my list of examples of side quests to highlight.
Well, and you know, I guess what I'm thinking of is back in Skyrim, you know, like you can buy a house in each major city. You can build your own house if you collect enough materials. And while I do enjoy that, like even Breath of the Wild, right? Like Link can buy his own house and you can decorate it and put shit in it. There's a utility in Skyrim where once you buy your house, you get a trunk that you can put in your house. So you can put all your extra crap in that trunk that you might want eventually, right? You can decorate it. You can fill it with all like the extra food. So you can take that food with you. Any extra potion that you get, you can put it in there so it doesn't add to your encumbrance. Like it has a bit of a utility to it, but it's also real bullshit. Like it doesn't do a whole lot.
Some people just want to role play, I guess. It's for those weirdos. I live in this world. I'm going to position my character next to this table and pretend I'm having dinner with my imaginary wife.
My thrall.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, there's two that I want to mention that are along the same lines as far as side quests that I really enjoyed, which are side quests that then tie back into the critical path. One being Horizon Zero Dawn, in which your main battle at the end of the game between all of the evil robots, if you have completed certain side quests, those characters come and help you fight. And I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah, there's a few games that do that.
Yes.
I think I want to say a couple of the Fallout, Dragon Age, Elder Scrolls games, that sort of thing where you get bailed out by whatever faction you've helped out the most.
Yeah.
I think that happened in The Outer Worlds as well.
I like that because then there is a bigger payoff. There's a bigger payoff to all this setup and, you know,
there's an investment.
Right. And it like for Horizon Zero Dawn, it was an unknown investment. I was just doing these side quests. I enjoyed those stories. And then eventually it's like, oh, it's a treat. It's a little cake topper.
I don't know what it is. It's a payoff.
Yeah.
It's a payoff for putting the work in. There's a lot of games where you just do the side quest and they go, oh, that's the end of that side quest. We all learned something about friendship. Bye. But
yeah,
for some reason, I'm thinking of Mass Effect 2, where all your crew members have like a side story. And if you complete their individual side story, and for that reason only, that character survives the like climactic sequence at the end of the game.
Oh.
If you didn't do their side story, then then they die. I mean, it's a bit hard line.
Because you obviously didn't care enough about them.
Yeah. I guess that's what they're going by. You didn't care about this character, so we killed them off. Hope you're satisfied.
Bye.
They loved you.
Yeah.
But that's a good example of side questing having a payoff in the critical path.
Well, and along those lines, and I promise I will not talk about Dark Souls too much, but in Dark Souls 3, the Sigward of Katarina side quest.
Oh, yes. That's got a payoff.
Oh, and you know, the first time I went through the game, I didn't know about it. I was, you know, I found him here, and I just so happened to do everything in the right order. I got him his armor back. I got him here. I helped him here. I helped him here. And I just thought like, oh, what a fun nod to Onion Bro, right?
That's sort of the trouble with Souls games. And I know we promised we weren't going to talk too much about those because we talked too much about it the last two episodes.
Just a little bit.
Well, the thing with the side quest is it's one of many things you probably won't pass unless you have looked up how to do so.
Right.
I mean, the Sigmire's plot in the first Dark Souls, to advance it at one point, you have to go back to Blighttown. And there's literally no reason to go to Blighttown at that point in the game.
Right.
And then find him in some out-of-the-way spot saying, oh, I appear to be in a pickle again.
No, and then like to advance his story even more, you need to half fight incredibly difficult enemies, but not fully, because he has to fight a little bit too. But but like the Sigurd during Dark Souls 3 has a kind of a logical step to it. And then, you know,
the fact that you stumbled upon it indicates that I suppose there must be like a path. Yeah. And I guess it must be all the more satisfying the small number of people who accidentally stumble upon these things.
And then he shows up to a boss fight. You know, like you don't have to summon him. He just shows up and helps with a boss fight. It was a genuine moment of pride for me. Yeah. It was like, I did something right. Sigurd is here.
I mean, it's obscure, the things you have to do, but the fact that some people figure it out by themselves makes the feeling of satisfaction they get all the better. It's like if I look to camera and say, hey, Adrian, take that job you were thinking about. That won't apply to most people, but it would be worth it for just the very small number of people called Adrian who are not sure if they're going to be taking a job who are watching this podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
like saying the card you're thinking of is the Seven of Diamonds. Probably wasn't, but was it worth it to really freak the shit out of the very small number of people for whom it was?
For whom we're currently like shuffling through a deck of cards and stopped right when you said that. And they just happen to have that card. Yeah. But you know,
it's
more
worth
importantly,
it just to freak out that very small number of people.
And it pays off. It has the grand applause moment. Everything builds to that peak in both of those examples. And there's one more Dark Souls thing I want to mention, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what Yahtzee has to say.
Well, this is the last thing on my list.
Yeah.
Which is in the territory of side activities that can run through the whole game.
Okay.
And that's Zelda Wind Waker figurine collecting.
Oh, I have to remember the figurines now.
This is a difficult thing to find, and it's basically designed for people who've, like, done everything else in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens is you stumble upon this, what they call the Nintendo Workshop, which is this dude in a shed who makes figurines. But he can only make a figurine if you give him a photograph of the thing you want a figurine made out of. And here's the thing. He will make a figurine out of every monster and every character in the game if you take a photo of it.
Really?
And you can, and he's got this entire museum next to his shed that's full of pedestals, mostly empty.
Yeah.
So what this does is it adds an extra activity to everything you do. You can't just kill the bosses. You can't just kill all the monsters. You also now have to take a picture of them. And it has to be a good picture. You have to be able to see the whole boss, and they have to be facing the front, and maybe like putting up two fingers and making a little winky face.
Does it tell you if it's a good picture?
It doesn't, no. You have to take the picture, go all the way to the Nintendo Workshop, give it to this dude, and only then will you know if it was a good enough picture.
Holy crap, that's a lot.
As I say, it's for the people who've like done everything else.
Right.
But I appreciate it from a sort of Zen perspective. It gives you a chance to appreciate the look of all the characters, because it's a pretty good-looking game. It gives you like an extra thing to have in the back of your mind throughout the course of every other thing you do in that game. It sort of adds a new dimension. We are now role-playing Link as an infuriating tourist.
Oh man! Is that,
wait! I can't beat you yet, boss fight. Got to capture this moment for the kids back home.
Just wildly rolling away. Just no! Don't hit me! Don't hit me! Don't hit me! Don't hit me! Yeah.
And also, like, you know, I think every time you get him to make a figurine, you get an extra bit of like flavor text describing the thing you took a picture of, and then you can like examine the model from all sides on its pedestal. So it's like a bunch of things in one. It's like 100% completion. It's like building the world. Mm. It's making a little art gallery, and it's, as I say, adding the new dimension to gameplay as you go through it.
That's fair. That's really fair. I think that might be a little too much for me.
It's probably too much for a lot of people. I just appreciate the way it's a side quest that can like naturally run through everything, like 100%ing all the scans in Metroid Prime.
Ooh, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's not just fighting all the monsters, but remembering to scan them all as well. Scanning mechanic is one of the best parts of Metroid Prime, to my mind.
Absolutely.
It's a combination tutorial system, world-building system, hint system, all sorts of things.
And integral to gameplay, as like that's the only way you can find enemies' weaknesses. Tells you story. It's a way of linking gameplay and storytelling. It's one of the reasons why Metroid Prime is brilliant.
Well done, Metroid Prime.
Yeah, you did it.
We all love you. Please do another game.
Come on. Or let us play your games on modern consoles.
What's wrong with you? Free money.
The last thing that came up on my list for, you know, I was thinking of games that I've played and like kind of things that have stuck with me that were side questy, and it's going to be Dark Souls. Sorry, this has been 95% not Dark Souls, so we can get a little bit of Dark Souls, which is Dark Gwendolyn.
Dark Sun Gwendolyn.
Dark Sun Gwendolyn.
Okay.
Go on. The fact that I want to say, you know, the first few times I played and completed Dark Souls, I did so not even realizing that Dark Sun Gwendolyn was a thing in the game.
Big part of the lore as well.
A huge part of the lore, like very integral to kind of the story of like the theme, right, of keeping alive a dying world.
Yeah, because it turns out, spoiler alert, a large part of one of the most significant parts of the game is an illusion being perpetrated by Dark Sun Gwendolyn. And you can get through the whole game without ever realizing this.
That's beautiful. Like the fact that they also covered it up with, you know, like gigantic, beautiful, gorgeous, voluptuous woman, right? Like like something that was laser focused to gamers, as we've seen now with the new Resident Evil voluptuous lady, where they're like,
have just gone mad for that.
You know, you will adore Gwendolyn. You will do anything for her. It's all an illusion. It's all fake. It's beautiful.
Yes. I mean, everything's fake. It's a video game. But this was double fake. This was contextual fake as well.
Well, and then, you know, like...
You thought you could slide your head between those big old dirty pillows and go blah, blah, blah. Well, you can't. You could try, but then you piss some people off because it turned out they weren't real.
And then, not in the
way titties aren't real in the usual sense.
These aren't just cartoon titties. These are fake cartoon titties. The absolute eerie atmosphere that New Londor or Anno Londor has after you, even like if you accidentally hit Gwendolyn with something, all of the enemies go away. It's Anno Londor is now in darkness. There's no one to fight. It is creepy as hell walking through the giant empty halls.
And there's like a PvP covenant that you can join where you can like invade the worlds of people who have ruined their Anno Londor and kick the shit out of them for being a bunch of spoil sports.
Right. And so like I said,
that's a whole lot of design that they didn't need to do.
Yes.
I mean, it's all in, like, the side stuff, I suppose, in Dark Souls. But we weren't going to talk too much about that because we've gushed about Dark Souls so much.
No. Just the idea of, like, you know, truly, truly something not only on the side, something literally hidden, something so unnecessary. Yes, and that's all of my Dark Souls talk, I swear.
All right. And I guess that's all the stuff we had to say about side quests as well.
There was like a few honorable mentions, like thinking of like Batman Arkham Knight. I really enjoyed all the stuff that you could happen across. Like, do you remember like floating around the city and just hearing classical music and going, what the hell is that all about?
Yeah, ooh. That was pretty well done.
Ooh, loved that.
That was getting away from the Ubisoft sandbox problem where everything's just icon on map.
Yes.
There's icon on map. Go to icon on map. Press button on thing. Move on to next icon on map.
Yeah, and there are and a few things.
I like it when they introduce a more organic way of finding the activities.
Like that and Man-Bat, I want to say, were just like random things that you could happen across while gliding across the city. And that made me feel like Batman. That made me feel like I was jumping from rooftop to rooftop and just fighting crime wherever it pops up.
Well, as long as it makes you feel like Batman.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, those are my honorable mentions. That's all I got for side quests.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to this podcast about side quests, everyone.
Yes. If you haven't, this episode was based off of our slightly Civil War, talking about which is more important, side quests or the main or the critical path, as it is known.
How many more individual elements of video games can we squeeze podcasts out of, I wonder?
Every single gosh darn one of them. You can go watch that over on escapistmagazine.com, where you can become an Escapist Plus member that has a ton of perks. You probably heard about them before this episode because we talk about it. Or you can become a YouTube member and get things like our videos a week early on YouTube and special emotes when we live stream.
And remember to follow us all on Twitter. I'm at Yahtzee Croshaw.
I'm at Harlack.
You can follow The Escapist on at Escapist Magazine. And all zero punctuation, just a zero punctuation, on at C punctuation.
And that's all the plugs. So thanks for listening or watching.
Did I mention Toffee's wearing his Marty McFly vest today?
We're gonna go back in time. We're gonna go back in time.
I guess I know what our Halloween family Halloween costumes are going to be this year.
Yes. Yes, do it. Wait, if he's Marty McFly, what are you going to be? Doc Brown?
I suppose. Maybe my wife can be Biff Tannen.
I love it. I love it, especially if she's old man Biff Tannen with like just have some car wax with her.
All right. All right. Toffee saying goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for watching and listening. Bye.
Bye.